episode 79 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. Today is March the 31st, 2012. I am Matthew Dean Furlough, and this is not my brother, James Furlough. April Fools! Everybody will be listening to this on April 1st, so that joke's not quite as stupid, although I did say that today is March 31st.
April Fools, it's actually April 1st.
It's a big surprise show. Ironically, the one thing I didn't like add to our article list was Google's April Fools joke, which we might get around to talking to briefly, but
yeah, maybe. So I am here. I was gone last week. And I am back from Mexico. Literally, I have been home for about half an hour, I think. So I have not showered, which is why my hair looks crazy. I stink. I don't know how else to say that because I haven't showered. I haven't showered since Friday. So I stink significantly. But I'm here. I'm doing the podcast, and I will admit to have I read some articles and some stuff, but not all of them. And I think part of that is I was trying some different readers out, since you know Google's being dumb,
ruining the
world. And so the one that I was trying, which was Feedly, I am still getting used to it. There's some quirks to it that I really don't like, and I'm trying to figure out how to go around it. And so that, you know, slowed me down and stuff like that. But so I'm back completely ill-prepared. I don't have a sheet open. I don't know what stories we're going to talk about. Matthew, it's all on you.
Great. So, now people are going to have to be miserable 2 weeks in a row. That's awesome.
No, it's okay. I think it'll be all right because I won't be distracted by like reading the article. I will be present in the conversation. Another thing we're doing, so this will be interesting, is I'm not recording this. I'm letting Google do everything. Normally I have a backup recording go, and I don't.
Yeah.
This time. No particular reason why, other than
technically,
I want to try it.
Technically, I know you may not have experienced this, but technically what's the word I'm looking for? We actually pioneered that first step last week.
That's right.
I didn't have the recording equipment to be able to record it because I could only record it locally and not with our special guest, Evneet. That was all done over. If you liked the quality, that's why.
Yeah, so we'll see how it goes. Taking a risk. I would say for the last like 6 weeks, that's been the case. I haven't been, I've been recording it and not using it and just literally deleting it. And so I'm like, well, let's save a step. Let's see how that works. And then if this works the way that I think it will, I have some other ideas for future weeks. But being that I was literally only home for a half hour, I did not have time to implement them. So
no worries. Well, and not to,
that's enough administrative garbage. Let's get on with the show.
Yeah, let's seriously. This week, like every week, we'll be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing. Happy Easter! And before we get into the heart of the show, James has a short.
Did you
disclosure.
Say Happy Easter? Did you throw that one in there?
Okay. You know, I suddenly realized that it's actually Sunday, and you know, it's like a big holiday and whatnot.
It is. Where were we? I have a disclosure. Is that what we're doing? I still work for HP. Well, I haven't opened up my email, so I'm in like a week. So I'm pretty sure I still work for HP. no reason why not. However, during this podcast, I do not represent HP or anything they've done in the last week or before then. And so there you go.
Nice. You want to... I like the disclosure within the disclosure. I work for HP, probably. If you want to follow us throughout the week and find out if James actually still has a job or not, you're welcome to follow us on the tweeters. I am at Matthew D. Furlough.
I can do this. Sorry. And I am at James Furlough.
And we really need you all to follow us, okay? Like, if you listen to the show and you're like, yeah, you know, they're great, but I'm not going to follow them throughout the week. That's ridiculous. Like, honestly, we need you to follow us. And we're going to start right off the bat with why we need you to follow us. So this week...
Yeah, why do we need them to follow us?
Okay, this week, kind of big news. Google decided that they wanted to do they're doing their early release for Google Glass, right? The thing's going to cost $1,500. It's going to be a limited release. But turns out that tons and tons and tons of people have $1,500, and they don't have tons and tons and tons of Google Glasses.
Okay.
So they did this competition. They created scarcity not to drive up price, but specifically to drive to create a viral idea, and they're leveraging a couple other technologies. I've been reading the book Contagious. It's crazy good. And it's blowing my mind. All of a sudden it's like
Contagious?
Yeah, it's about viral.
What's that about?
Well, the name of the book is a lot, it suggests it's a lot about viral stuff, things that go viral, but really and truly the heart of the book is about
how to health.
It's the heart of the book is really about how to engage in word of mouth marketing and how to get people to talk about your products and to share your product because it's the most powerful type of marketing there is. And in the modern age, you know,
look at this engineer stepping into the marketing world.
It's important
being.
Oh man, dude. And honestly, this show, it's going to be, I hope it benefits from it. We might have to get
So let me ask you, are you liking the book? Do you like it?
Oh, it's great. It's really good. It's very good.
That was my life for 2 years in the MBA program. Just reading awesome books like that one after another.
Yeah. Well, he talks about all those books too. Not Built to Fail. No. What's the other one?
Built to Last.
That's the one. Yeah, those ones. And it's funny, in his intro, he talks about those books, and he's like, they're great books, and they pick stories, and they break down the stories, but he goes, like, I'm a cognitive psychologist, I like stories, but I want to get into the meat of, like, what actually affects things statistically. How can we study these things and see what works? And so he, like...
Is it called Contagious?
Contagious. It's good.
Okay. I'm adding to my list right now.
I'm reading it on my Kindle Paperwhite. One of the ways, long and short of this, Google has started this campaign to get people talking about Google Glass. And this all kind of knits together into this idea that earlier this week, or a couple weeks ago, they started this competition called If I Had Google Glass, I think is what it was. And it was a hashtag. And what you would do is you would tweet out what you would do if you had Google Glass, and you'd include the hashtag, and Google was going to go through all of those tweets. I can't remember what exactly the hashtag is. I have it somewhere. Give me 1 second.
But yeah, it was like, if I had glass or something like that.
Yeah. If I had glass. And the idea was that they would go through all those submissions, they'd find the people who would do the coolest things, and then once they knew what the coolest thing was, that, you know, what they have it, they would select out of those eight, or out of that like gigantic number of people that did all this, that submitted everything, they would pick 8,000 people, and those people would win the awesome prize of having to pay $1,500 to Google for the hardware.
And wouldn't they have to, if I remember correctly, fly to New York or, you know, wherever it was to pick it up in person too? They weren't just going to ship it to you?
New York, LA, or San Francisco.
Yeah, so that would be a big deal to me, not so big of a deal for you.
Right, yeah, exactly. I'd just kick on over to San Fran. But they've beat me down so many times into believing that I don't matter to them in any capacity that I didn't even try. You should have, but I didn't.
I didn't either. I didn't want to spend $1,500.
Yeah, that's the other thing.
Especially when they're 2 weeks later, they're going to come out with another model that will be cheaper.
In one year, they're going to come out with a $300 model. Plan.
I have patience.
So yeah, exactly. It's cool, but I just don't have that kind of cash in around. Anyways,
so they did this competition, and
So
I'm
immediately
still waiting for this to tie into us needing more followers.
I know. I'm getting there. Okay. So basically what happened was his PhD, there's a lot of like complaints because there were people that were winning that were like, that were clearly not really into it. They'd put out like one tweet and they like didn't have anything to really back up what they were doing. And obviously a lot of developers and tech enthusiasts were like super into this and really wanted like to get on it. So the idea that people that like either A, didn't qualify for whatever, because there was a couple of qualifications, either A, they clearly didn't qualify, or B, they just obviously didn't care. They were just doing it because it sounded cool. Really, really upset a lot of people. And they were wondering,
these were people that were getting accepted?
Yeah. Yeah. And so people.
Because they put out a list.
Right. So people who didn't get. Well, I don't know if they put out a list. I don't know how people found out. Well, they must have put out a list. Because, anyways, big question has been, you know, what were the qualifications? Who won and why? Everybody wants to know. Yeah. Well, this dude decided he's got a PhD, Stanford PhD by the name of Andrej Kapathy, put together some data in an attempt to show that what Google's overall plan for this whole thing might have been. As it turns out, Google has a clever criteria for choosing competition winners after all. Based on the data gathered by him, after going through their profiles of all the competition winners on Twitter by using Python and a little hackery, Google apparently chose mostly celebrities and famous Twitter personalities to win its competition. So
awesome.
They pick people who are big connectors, people with big followers. They probably just grabbed people's clout score to some degree. You know, it's a big surprise. Woo! So this is like brilliant. This is amazingly brilliant. And you know, in the context of this, which of course this upsets like all your tech people because you're like, well, I'm not famous, but I can do cool stuff with it. But what it proves is that this is identical to what Microsoft does with their open betas for Windows, where Windows, we've talked about this on the show before. So brief recap, Windows always has a giant beta where pretty much anybody can download it for free for like the 8 months leading up to the big release.
Right.
And then you're able to submit stuff. But basically what it is it's just a trial use period while it's still in quote beta. So if it doesn't work or there's bugs, then you can't complain about it. And then at the end of the 8 months, it goes away. It's a gigantic, enormous marketing campaign designed to specifically to put this thing in the hands of users. And Google is great at this sort of thing. It's like with Google Plus. How did they get attention early on? They didn't just open it up to everybody. You had to get a special invite. Gmail, early on, you couldn't just get in. You had to get a special invite. And this guy talks about in the book Contagious, whereby he addresses specifically this strategy where he gives an example of there's a boutique, online boutique store. It's not doing really well. It's doing all right, but you know, it's just all right. He started this other store that exact same products, exact same prices, but it was a limited number of items, limited time period that you could buy it. And you had to be an invite-only membership, and they would sell out everything within the first 30 minutes.
Wow.
Of every item, because it was exclusive. It made people think that they were getting a special deal. So basically what this was, this is a giant way to get the word out about, hey, it's Google Glass, it's a giant ad campaign. This whole thing is brilliant. I love this. Because like,
so then they really don't need feedback then. They feel like they've got it locked in, or you know, their whatever processes they normally use to get feedback are going to work just fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm assuming like as far as developers go and stuff, you know, because that was the big promise of it, right? We're going to give it to early developers to come up with products. No,
yeah, they called it the developer whatever edition.
Yeah, that's not it at all. This is entirely, I'm sure there are developers who won, but that's clearly not the point. The point was to give it to people who could share it with developers or share it with people, but people who would share it, people who would wear it, people who would get noticed, because they've only got 8,000 and they want 300 million people to go, wow, that's really cool.
I wonder like what percentage, you know, did they just do like 1,000 popular people or even, you know, a couple hundred, and we just happen to know all those couple hundred names, and yeah, sure. There are actually 7,800 other developers that are cool? I don't know. That'd be interesting. Or was it like an overwhelming majority or just famous people?
Well, it's what it said, you know, unfortunately this article is a little bit of blog spam. It doesn't actually link to the article at all. It does say that it was mostly celebrities and Twitter personalities.
So what you're saying is people got to follow us, not just because RSS is going away and that'll be the only way they know about new episodes, but because it will allow us to get cool things in the future.
Yeah, exactly. This is how Google pays attention. Ironically, I love the fact that they didn't pay attention to your Google Plus profile stuff.
Well, you know.
You know, yeah, you know, it's nice.
Maybe they did. And this guy,
they probably did.
Unless he, you know, I don't. Well, those things are also highly correlated, anyways.
Right, it's true.
It doesn't matter.
If you're a big connector, you're a big connector. I'm like a major outlier for cloud because I follow my cloud score because I have a decent one. But it's like I get a huge cloud score because I got like a giant Facebook following. You know, because I've been on the site for coming up on a decade. That's terrifying. That's absolutely terrifying.
You're old. You should, yeah. That means you're stuck on Facebook.
That's
if you were
scary.
Young, you'd be getting off, but you know, you're old.
That's scary on so many levels, I don't even know what to do. And it's funny, you think about all the new services.
By the way,
yeah.
You're looking good.
Thank you. I appreciate
you're
that.
Good. You I may mean, be getting older, but you're looking good. Looking I'm trim.
Like,
I see,
lost like
you know,
90 pounds.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
So did you finally feel comfortable enough to get rid of the beard? You're like, all right, I reached whatever that weight was, or was this just it was time to get rid of the beard?
No, you see, I decided that the only thing that I like more than having a beard is growing a beard. Really is what it came down to. And I shaved my face, and I was like, I immediately regretted it. But what was even worse is my hair horrible. So I like had to go out and get a haircut right away. But you know, I've gotten a lot of compliments. People think it looks nice. A girl I've been flirting with told me I look nice on Saturday. So you know, whatever.
You look younger.
You know, I appreciate it. I try. Actually, that was the funniest thing. I went out with one of our cousins to get dinner, and we went to a kind of nice restaurant. They had like a drinks menu, and the dude came over and added a page to the drinks menu, which was for Italian sodas. He goes, "Oh, I just added Italian sodas for you guys too." I was like, "Really?" I haven't been carded in the last 5 years, and I'm like only 25. Like, let's be real here. Nobody thinks I'm that young. That's crazy. Of course, she looks pretty young too. So, but
that's funny.
We're both over 24. I'm 26, I guess. How old am I? I'm 26.
Tim yeah, you're 26.
That's terrifying. Anyways, long
you're looking
story.
Good.
Thank
all
you.
Right.
I appreciate that. My face. So yeah, this is crazy. I mean, it's just or this is brilliant, dude. I love this. This is the sort of thing that's like, yeah, man. This is just straight up. You know, one of the things we I don't
start
know.
Shipping already. Come on, guys. No. You know, quit dragging it out.
You didn't listen to the show last week yet, jerk.
Nope.
But you know, one of the things I mentioned is, and I think this is unique about the show. I think is that we actually talk about marketing campaigns, and this is the kind of ones that are fun where you're like, you realize, oh wait, this is marketing. This isn't TV ads. This is I don't know. I got it. Oh, it feels good. Anyways,
did it say how many people replied back?
No, these are terrible articles.
Okay,
they're awful.
Yeah, that's okay. That's allowed. I just was wondering.
It's not really allowed. It's actually pretty bad journalism on these parts. Since we're not journalists, so we're allowed to say that.
Yeah, I that's interesting. That's an interesting way to do it. I mean, you know, it also helps that they're Google and they can get away with that kind of stuff because they're already huge. You know, if we did it, I don't think we would get nearly the kind of response. But we're also not, like, making anything amazing.
You see, yes, we are, James. We make thought-provoking podcasts every week, and they are amazing, okay?
Okay, yeah, I'm with you there. That is not a smartphone on your face.
That's it's a little different, yeah, you know.
It goes. See that rests on your ears, and I get it. Ours is between the ears, but let's be honest. Hardware wins.
Yeah, it's
any
true.
Time of the week. Hardware is sexy.
It is. So, talking about virility.
I don't know if I've mentioned that enough times yet.
That's funny. Talking about virility, first off, QZ.com, it's called Quartz. I've never looked at this website before. I was reading their articles all week. This thing is, like, really good. I don't even know where it came from. I don't know how I've missed this website my whole life. But I say that because don't do that.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm blowing up my computer.
Which I actually just thought you will have to send me all the articles because I'm going to put them in the podcast.
Yes, just thought I realized that. Hey,
but not right now. I'm loving this. I'm just going.
Oh baby, you're like this.
Helps
is like
that I drove for 12 hours today.
This is like what is it? Space Mountain. Where you're like, it's dark out. It's a roller coaster. You don't know which way we're going to turn next. It's awesome. That's all right. I don't really know where we're going either.
It's cool.
So were you familiar with the internet fad, the Harlem Shake?
Yeah.
That's good. Do you think anybody who's listening to this show, if you're listening to this show and don't know what the Harlem Shake is, number one, click on it and just Google the Harlem Shake.
Just go to none of the trick, if I remember correctly, is to go to YouTube and search for Harlem Shake and then don't move.
Yeah, just let it sit there for a couple of seconds. Except that's right? Really funny if you already know what's supposed to happen.
Oh, well, yeah, I guess that's true. Let's see, is that how that works? It's Harlem Shake. If I just sit there, is this going to work? There are some really bad ones, though, let's be honest.
Oh, most of them are bad.
I'm looking at the front page. The first one looks fine. Third one's horrible. Maybe that's not right. That's the right one. Anyways, yeah, I am aware of said meme.
The Harlem Shake. So, Google charts search terms over time.
Should have done.
Which is fascinating. And somebody made a graph. It was that stretches from 2005 to 2012 to current day. And of course, it's completely the term Harlem Shake doesn't even exist on Google. Until, like, 2013. I bought this song. I like it that much. I actually like the song. But I didn't buy Gundam Style, though, which I'm thankful for because it showed up on my Pandora on, like, Thursday. And I was like, how did I ever like this song? This song is so dumb.
I was down in Mexico, in case you didn't know. And, it was kind of weird. The day that we left was like the beginning of spring break for all of the California colleges. Mm-hmm. And apparently San Felipe is like a big place for spring breakers to go. And we had been on the beachfront the beginning part of the week, and it was like a normal place. Completely different a short week later. Just like stands and people and tents. It was transformed. Anyways, they had like music blaring all over the place. And at one point in time, they had the Kingman style song going. I mean, these are all English American songs, completely 100% catering to the college students coming down for a spring break. And I was just like, wow, man, I thought these things were like fake, but no, apparently spring breaks are real.
Yeah. No, yeah, I suddenly realized that at some point in recent history that I'm going to Cabo in the middle of April, which is like, you know, the classic spring break destination during the classic spring break, which is not intentional, but
cheers to that,
yeah,
huh?
Seriously. Hopefully it'll be enjoyable. I don't know. Anyways, so this is an interesting graph because it just like it explodes all of a sudden. Obviously, it just takes off. Everybody's searching for the Harlem Shake, they're basically saying that this is the fastest that any term Google that has ever shot up, except for Whitney Houston after her death. I mean, this one hit big, hit hard, And this is a great article. I actually really suggest you, like, if you're interested in this at all, go and check it out, because it basically gives you the chronology of what happened. How did this thing go viral? So it started in June, on January 30th of 2012.
13.
You're right. Thank you. So this...
I was going to say, a year does not sound that fast, if I may interject.
Yeah.
Now, a couple months? Yes.
Yeah. George Miller was this dude. He posts stuff on YouTube. And one of the... He does all sorts of videos. He's got a decent following with a channel. And they basically did a Harlem Shake type thing in the first 19 seconds of one of the videos. And it was, so the video is like supposed to be 30 seconds or whatever it is, but it was the only 19 seconds in this case. February 2nd, somebody, some fans of the show did a stage, another version of it from Australia. And this is the one that is kind of credited with starting the whole thing. By February 3rd, people were, demanding, more. No. February 3rd was the Super Bowl. Sorry. February 3rd, there was the 22-second power outage. And during the 22-second power outage, a lot of people have looked back and said, that's when the biggest marketing was there going on, because everybody got on their phones and started going to Twitter and Facebook. And a lot of the marketing execs who had access to their Twitter accounts started tweeting jokes, and Oreo just had tons of retweets about their jokes and stuff. So there was just, it was viewed as a very, very effective, hey, if you jump onto this, you can just hit it hard and you can get a lot of attention. On February 7th to the 8th, there was this team, called Maker Studios. They're an ad company, and they basically sit on Reddit and look for things that are going pre-viral. And they thought that they realized that this one was going pre-viral, and which I think is interesting, because it basically started on Reddit. And so they did, I don't know if you've seen the one, but it's a big old office. The entire office does a Harlem Shake. Well, this that was that team. They were a marketing team. And so they put together one, and they wanted to see if they couldn't kick it off and get it going. And it had the effect that they wanted it to, because I remember that was the video that I saw that I went, oh, what the heck is this? And then I checked, and then I went into the comments, and I saw the first couple of Harlem Shakes. And that's when I tweeted off the Harlem – I started tweeting about the Harlem Shake. So I got totally drawn into this. The Harlem Shake V2 was actually the one that I've – which was the same Australian kids, but it was – that did the one that's credited with quote-unquote starting it. But this is the one that just got huge numbers that everybody saw. And this is when Bauer, the artist, got involved, and the different labels got involved. This is when YouTube or Google went, something's happening over here. So they started to figure out all the advertising on it. And of course, allowed to, post these videos with the understanding that all this copyrighted material will be going to, the different people who own the material that own it. By February 10th,
So here's what I want to know.
Yeah.
Which one's your favorite?
Which one's my favorite Harlem Shake?
Yeah.
Honestly, I think – there are three that I really liked. The Harlem Shake V2, which is the Australian kids doing the original, like the one that started it with the helmet and the kind of doing the whole thing. I thought that was hilarious. I because it was just – it's so clearly the first one that kind of like, this is what it's supposed to be. It set the stage. There's one of a couple of firefighters fire truck, and the one dude doing it. And then they like all of a sudden it flips to them in crazy costumes.
Yeah, that one's good.
I was crying. I was laughing so hard. And then the other one that I really liked is it's his dad just looking in the red webcam with his son, just kind of, his really, really young son, look like 4 years old, three, 4 years old. It's kind of goofing off in the background with his head going to the song, and all of a sudden it kicks and they start going. I really liked those three. There was one with a banana. It wasn't called the Harlem Shake. It was called the Banana Shake. And it was like, that one was pretty good too. I think my favorite was the fire truck one though. That one was pretty awesome.
I had two that I really liked. I saw the swimming one, the underwater one. I don't know. That one is just like, okay, that's cool. You know, it was more like an impressive human feat.
Yeah.
And then the concert one.
Which one was the concert one?
Oh, it's crazy. So it starts out and it's like this this guy who's standing on it's on a concert stage, like in the middle of the day. No one else is in there except for him and a person like on the drums, just like fooling around on her phone type of thing, right?
Wait. Oh my gosh. Yeah. It was a guy and a girl or the two artists, right?
Yeah, I think so.
That's awesome. Okay. I was about to tell the story. Go ahead.
Okay, so the guy, he's doing his thing. She's like messing around on the phone, and then when it does the flip, it is a jam-packed stadium with people and lights, and they're going, and you're just like, whoa.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
A couple weeks ago, I went to the Bill Graham Center in San Francisco and saw the headlining performer was Group Love, but the opening of the show was Icona Pop and Matt and Kim. And in the middle of the song, or in the middle of the Matt and Kim set, we're all sitting there, and all of a sudden the Bower starts, and it's Matt is playing. And I looked at my cousin, I was like, whoa, oh my gosh, this is about to happen. And and it just all of a sudden they drop into
this.
This
is a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, and like I think they were doing a big concert tour. So I'm sure that the one that I was at wasn't the one that ended up on YouTube, but it was awesome because you're all sitting there and everybody's just kind of like sitting there calm. Like, you know, like we all know what's about to happen. Nobody's dancing except Matt's doing his thing up on stage. And all of a sudden they just go and everybody just starts thrashing in the audience. It was really cool. You're like, and it just was completely unspoken. Everybody knew that's what we were supposed to do. It was great. I'm glad that I saw it when I saw it because this thing is so clearly dead. Like nobody is doing the Harlem Shake anymore. Like it's completely dead meme. You are anti-cool now. It has negative social currency. You are in social debt if you're doing a Harlem Shake at this point.
Yeah, it's the Matt and Kim edition. Is that who you saw? Yeah,
Matt and Kim. That's awesome.
There you go.
Send me that video. It might be me.
I think I can do that. Here you go. I'm just gonna right now. I'll just chat it to you.
Okay.
Boom. We could probably watch this together, but...
Well, I don't know how to do that, though. This thing drives me nuts. I'm just going to look really quickly to see... Yeah. No, yeah, this wasn't us. This is a different... This isn't the Bill Graham Center.
But I like that one because it was just so huge.
Yeah.
That's cool. Cool, man. That thing took off pretty amazing, and it died pretty fast too. It's kind of crazy like what the internet can do in terms of viral, just like craziness.
Well, and what I really like about this article is it sums up at the end what's changed and what stays the same. And basically what it says is what changed is it gets into the idea of how viral marketing works nowadays. And that there are companies that their entire purpose is to figure out what things are going viral and try to wedge themselves into them and just help things explode before they take off and to use that to leverage future business.
Right.
And then when they go into what stayed the same, they basically said, what stayed the same? Nobody but the copyright owners made money. The creators of the original videos, the dude that actually like did the 19-second clip, his YouTube video didn't get any attention. Harry Bower Rodriguez, the guy who made the song, he got a little bit of money, but he had sampled so many different songs that they're like, in the end, he's going to get like $20 for that entire thing. It's just crazy to think about. That entire thing, millions and millions and millions and millions of people watching and downloading your song is going to make him you know, it'll be a nice little bonus this year. That's it, though. Hmm. It blows my mind to think about, because, you know, and like most performing artists, they
make all their money at Fickle.
Yeah. They make most of their money on TV shows. You know, the biggest change here is that, like, Google made such a big killing off of music now, which is weird. And it's all ad revenue. But, yeah. I don't know. And it's funny. They showed, the last thing they said was, Frank Miller, the dude who did the original video, he tweeted, "Hey, at Bauer, let's have pizza sometime." Bauer never responded. That's rough. And it's just, you know, that's what it is, you know, and I don't know. It's crazy to think about that. That's, you know, it's interesting to watch these things now. And I love the fact
that, you know, Bauer probably did make some iTunes music sales, probably.
Well, he did, but what they were saying was that so much of the music
is sampled. That's right.
He's got to pay people, and so it's like he ends up with a very small cut of the whole thing.
I think I did read that or heard that perhaps, that there was one guy who he had a sample and he gets a cut of it, and it was like, wow, he did nothing, and, you know, it'll be all right. Yeah, like you said, nice little bonus for the year.
You know, now I know who Bauer is, and if he shows up in San Francisco as part of a bigger set, I'll want to go see him, which was worth it to him. You know, but it's really and truly, he made a little bit of money, and it was a good advertising campaign for him.
But, power of the internet.
Oh, baby, it's cool. And it's interesting to pay attention to the fact now that these things aren't entirely viral. There are people that are making a lot of money that are trying to pay attention and pop things virally, which, like, makes sense. Like, you know, we like to think of the internet as this world of, you know, whatever, but it just, you know, it makes you got to be a little more critical about it.
Feel free to turn us into a meme anytime.
Yeah, okay. Please, thank you. We'd love it. So have you heard about China's war on Apple?
Nope.
So China has started a war on Apple, or that's what everybody's been calling it for the last week.
Okay.
And how? So basically what happened was, actually, this is crazy. Basically, 2 weeks ago, Apple Insider reported that China, one of the main news reporters, that news stations that China owns, just started ragging on Apple for terrible customer service, and were basically saying that Apple has Apple's return policies and how they take care of customers treats Chinese people as a second class citizen compared to America, which is not true at all. It's like Apple has the exact same policies in both countries. And
so they're saying that Apple actually has separate policies for Chinese citizens.
Yes, and they treat Chinese citizens worse.
Well, okay. Hmm. And they have evidence to back this up.
No.
Oh, okay.
They were just saying it, which is what's strange.
Well, this person, like, had a bad customer experience because they couldn't solve this problem.
Not this person, because what happens next is the main commie rag, as they're calling it, or the state-owned newspaper.
I love it.
Yeah, they
the commie rag.
they immediately started backing that up. So you now have two huge news sources that are basically saying, "Yeah, Apple hates China. They're bad for business. They're bad for citizens. Don't buy their phones."
Huh.
It became very clear very quickly that Apple was, or not Apple, that China was convincing their celebrities to agree about what was going on with this. And so it was just like, all of a sudden in the last 2 weeks, China has started a giant negative marketing campaign against Apple.
Well, that's weird. China. But why? Like, what's the motivation behind this?
See, that is the big question that everybody's been asking.
Oh. So are we going to guess?
There are a couple of guesses, but I think I know the answer, honestly.
I love it. What is it? I have a guess too, but mine's totally uneducated.
Okay. I want to hear your uneducated guess.
Apple's starting to have sales in China, and they're scared.
And, that is one of the big guesses.
And, you know, intimidated for their own national companies, and so, you know.
That is one of the big guesses, yes. And that was actually my initial guess when I was brought to me. Another guess that I've heard, and is...
This is what you think it is?
No.
Oh, all right.
Actually, I can't remember it now that I'm thinking about it.
Okay.
Because I ended up grabbing the wrong China's War on Apple article.
You're struggling on getting the right articles, man.
I know. It's really been kind of weird this week.
it's okay.
I expected to have backup, okay? No, I'm just kidding.
Sorry. Sorry.
No, it's all right. Well, it's like at the last minute, I suddenly realized I hadn't actually linked the article, so I had to like Google it really quick, like China's War on Apple, and just clicked on the first Forbes article. And I'm sure the information's in here. I don't have time to read it and find
okay,
it.
Okay, so what do you think is the reason?
So the reason why is because there are two Chinese companies. A couple months back, we were talking about this, and basically, basically, what happened was we as a country decided that we didn't want these companies to be doing business in America because they're owned by the military and we think that they're using their phone technology to spy on us, which we think that because
The U.S. thinks that?
Yes. And we think that China is doing that because they are doing that, and they're not very quiet about it. And if you have any doubts about that, like that's just – just like seriously, like if
so wait, so let me make sure I understand this correctly. China is building phones that are spying on United States citizens.
They're building networks, communication systems, and phones. They want to sell us phones, and they want to sell us cell phone towers that connect all their technology to their servers, so they can listen to everything that we're talking about.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's great. It's exactly what we don't want them to be doing.
And so we put like, I don't know if I could call them sanctions, but
we told them no, you can't do that.
Yeah, and this is their way of retaliating.
Pretty much. Well, okay, and that's one side of it. Yes, very much
it's
so. That
weird
is,
that they'd go after Apple. But
that is one side of it. But this is the thing, and this is actually the reason why I decided to click this Forbes article, is because. This Forbes article that I'm will link to late on at the website. Go check out the website; it has all our clicks and links. Is titled "China Did Not Just Declare War on Apple." Basically, the argument here is what I've been talking about, what this show has been talking about for months and months and months, which is the fact that Google really isn't allowed in China either. Yeah, Android phones are there, but Google Search isn't allowed there. Google Play Store isn't allowed there. Google Maps aren't allowed there. They're all other third-party Chinese apps and stuff, just leveraging Android to be able to do all that stuff. Everything that would make Google any money is blocked in China. And so what they think is going on is basically Apple's making some really good inroads. They're going to come out with their cheap world phone. And China is livid with the U.S. over all this trade war stuff that we're doing. And so basically they're sticking it to America where they think it'll hurt on one hand.
By
and the other is
writing that Apple's customer service is not good.
Yeah, that's basically what it is. What's fascinating?
Like a losing strategy.
Yeah, well, yeah. There's been a huge backlash within China. All the people are like, "This is clearly just government propaganda." But you know, the thing about government propaganda is that it number one, Apple doesn't need the customers that it already has. It needs the customers that it doesn't have. So, like, that will have an effect on future sales and total sales. And more importantly, you know, China's. They're a dictatorship. If they want to continue the propaganda for the next 10 years, Apple won't be able to sell in China. Because eventually, you know, you hear the lie enough times, it starts to sound a little bit like the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's all Apple needs, or all China needs to do is to sow the seeds of doubt to allow their companies to propagate. Now, everybody thinks that this is the end of the world for Apple and this will destroy their stock. But
yeah,
it does really seriously ignore the fact that in like the last 6 months, last two quarters, Apple is suddenly selling phones in India and like crazy because we talked about this before where they started up that marketing campaign team like 2 years ago and they finally started marketing. And as soon as they started marketing, guess what? People started buying phones. I'm almost positive they're going to come out with this world phone in a couple of months that'll be super cheap and it'll be just what India wants, unsubsidized phones that they can tether to month to month data plans. And I think they're going to sell like crazy.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're going to sell like crazy in China, or I mean in India. And the thing is that India, like the whole pie, the India doesn't isn't growing. The Indian economy isn't growing as fast as the Chinese economy, but they also don't have as like, and they're not as big of a country, but they don't have like a billion people that are in complete poverty on top of their like gazillionaires that live in the more centralized cities. You know, they're in India, the middle class is bigger, which means right. that the market is like as big in India as it is in China for your high end smartphones. So really and truly, I think what you're going to see over the next year or two is Apple really, really change their focus from China to India as the quote unquote emerging market. And you know, I think the strategy will be phone that will make it that will, you know, build phones that can make it in those low cost, non-subsidized month to month phones and have it take off in India, build the supply chain for it. And eventually, you know, try to work something out with the Chinese government. You pay them enough billions of dollars where they allow you to compete again in China.
China's so weird. I mean, I get it, right? You're looking at the size of the population and you're just like, there's so much potential there. But at the same time, it like the stuff that you have to deal with in order to tap that potential, it just drives you up the wall.
Yeah, I mean, that's the nice part of the nice part about India is that it's a democracy, so that there, I mean, there's a tremendous amount of you know, corruption, because there's corruption in every government. You get one that's that big and the world's largest democracy, there's going to be a bit of corruption, but at least it's not a dictatorship that you're dealing with.
Yeah.
You know, there's a little bit more fair practice. You can at least like convince people that, hey, this isn't fair. And then they might vote in your favor. And I have high hopes for India and what's going on there, but,
China.
Yeah.
Can't be
fascinating
happy.
Though. Everybody was like, you know, especially the anti-Apple thumpers thought that this was great, because it's like such bad news for Apple. You're like, it's such bad news for America, because Google's not making any money there either. Like, they're being terrible to us. This isn't anti-Apple. This is like a continuation of an Apple versus or China versus America thing, and it's not going to help any American. Is if Apple or if China ever decides to get, you know, all hinky with Foxconn and, you know, hey, how about you charge Apple a little bit more to manufacture here?
That would be interesting. That would hurt.
But there are no whiffs of that happening yet. But you know, of them actively subverting them in that way. But you know, who knows? So speaking of new phones, Oh no. There was this, man, I'm terrible this week. I don't even know what happened. Like, okay, 99% of the time, I've like got every article that I want to talk about, but somehow I completely, this is like the third article this has happened on. So there was a giant internet war that went out on this week.
I read something about that.
Yeah, so this was kind of fun. The company was it's something about spam.
You obviously lost the link.
Yeah, I did. I didn't even link it. This is terrible.
Man.
I don't know. I'm trying to think where I found it so I can go back and find it really quick. So basically what happened was, I'll give you the outline while I try to like look in the back of my brain.
Is it like a DOS attack or something?
Yeah, so DOS, distributed denial of service attack. Here we go. Boom. New York Times. So there's a it was a squabble between a group fighting spam and a Dutch company. Basically, what happened was SpamHaus is the company that's the spam fighter, and there was this Dutch company that they own a giant server farm, and their rules are the only thing we will host anything except anything related to terrorism or child porn. So basically anything that could get us, like, honestly attacked by countries. And just, like, the absolute, like, you know, most depraved of immorality. Those are the only two things that we won't touch. But everything else. So basically they're huge spam hosts. And this company that called SpamHaus, they are a nonprofit organization. I do believe that the people who work for the company are very profitable. They make tons and tons of money, but the company itself is nonprofit. But basically what they do is they back up a lot of other email providers and stuff, and they manage the internet in such a way that they try to block spam. And this last week they blacklisted this company, this Dutch company, and wouldn't allow any emails coming out of their servers. Well, this Dutch company makes tons and tons of money by, allowing
sending spam.
Yeah. And so, they weren't pleased. So essentially what they decided to do was to try to take down SpamHaus, and the attempt was to use a distributed denial of service attack.
You gotta love it, man, whenever you poke like a hacker bear, essentially.
Yeah.
It's like, can't expect them to just kind of go quietly into the night. Doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, exactly. And so, and what happened basically, this is what's crazy. So basically, this is it. They said, we're going to blacklist you. So anytime anything shoots out from your server, we're going to intercept it. We're going to say, no, that can't go anywhere. And so what the Dutch company decided to do was say, well, okay, how much spam will it take before your servers get overloaded? And so they just started dumping spam. Like they turned on all of their servers specifically trying to overload SpamHaus to prove that SpamHaus couldn't stop them. And this was essentially an effort to just hurt their business. Because this is going to be a battle back and forth for a while. But, so they started like shooting out emails and the stream was 300 billion bits per second, which is 300 gigs per second, or 300 gigabits per second. It's ridiculous. It is an unbelievable torrent of traffic. And it was such a torrent of traffic that websites such as Netflix started to slow down service. Now, if you remember back, this must have been last Christmas. So if you're a really, really long-term listener to the show, we talked about the Conflicker virus, because I'm scared to death of it. And basically, the biggest concern with botnets is you get so many computers. If they all start firing at once, if they all start sending out information, the domain name servers, the 13 main servers and all of their distributed agents literally wouldn't be able to handle all the traffic. They would get a distributed denial of service attack, which is like flooding a store with a line of a million people, and the store can't do any business because there's too many people. Do the same thing with servers. The servers don't actually go down. They're just overloaded. They can't finish communication. And that happens all of a sudden. You can't type Google into your browser and have it show up with Google. And you could effectively shut down the internet. But the craziest part about it is you could actually get to the point where you could take down entire router nodes. And you can get enough data going. There's so many computers on the networks that you really could overload some of your higher up nodes. And as soon as that starts to happen, you could, take down big chunks of the internet. At the very least, you could slow it down significantly. And that's exactly what these guys did. This is one of the biggest attacks of this type that's ever been seen.
Wow.
What's crazy is what this group was able to do with a single server farm is nothing compared to what a botnet could do. A botnet of sufficient size could dwarf this type of an attack, which is terrifying.
Wow.
But this is scary enough. And essentially, it was so big and it was so noticeable on the bandwidth of the internet that Google called up SpamHaus and was like, so how about you start routing some of your traffic to us? And so in order to free the internet back up, and it's funny, SpamHaus was like, oh no, we're like, You know, we've got this like system, like nobody else in the world could have survived this type of attack.
Yeah.
Which is not entirely true. Obviously Google could. And pretty much the only reason why they did survive and it was they were able to rebalance the internet in such a way that it didn't hurt it too much was because Google started absorbing such a big amount of the data flow. It's crazy.
That would be such an interesting call and conversation to be a part of.
Yeah.
Hey, we notice you're having trouble. We know it's coming from you. We can help. You just need to change this particular piece of code to start sending stuff our way. We'll take care of it. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
You know, and then call up those engineers and say, hey, PS, we're going to be sending about 300 gigabits of data per second coming. Just bury it.
Yeah. Just take care of it. And
you got about 30 minutes.
Well, did we talk about that story when, about that story when Facebook went down through most of Europe? No, it wasn't Facebook. It was Google. Google went down through most of Europe because of because of how the IP addressing system works. There's like four, if you've ever looked at it, there's like four sets of numbers. And the last bit is like your specific computer. But each node is a larger node that you're kind of going to. Mm-hmm. It's a server that basically knows where all the 256 other nodes below it are. And so it's this crazy system that we have. Well, one of the higher up nodes got written wrong in one of the main servers, and it essentially redirected all Google traffic to a dead link. So for like a half an hour, they shut down Google on accident. And I was reading about like when this basically Google realized, wait a second, something happened. They're like, oh, they've got all these red flags, so they start going like crazy. And the guys that are managing these servers or the routers that are doing all this IP addressing stuff, they have like no idea what's going on. All of a sudden, they get a phone call. Guys, we have a problem.
Yeah.
From Google. You're like, oh, shoot. That is not the kind of conversation you want to have. That's going to be nuts. It's just going to be crazy when Google decides to, you know, you forget that companies like Google and Facebook are so big and so significant that, you know, that they dwarf governments in the ability to affect this and just to follow this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
They track how the internet works. And when it stops working properly, they're there to kind of, hey, let's all be friends. Forget what we got to do. I don't know. It's crazy. It's fun to watch.
That is fun. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Sorry, I missed it.
Yeah. I don't know.
That would have just been frustrating. I'm trying to do my work.
Yeah, seriously.
I can't screen share right now. I'm sorry. The internet's slow. It's under attack.
Yeah, the whole internet. Oh, man. This is a story that really would have gone well earlier. So West Virginia is moving to ban Google Glasses while driving.
I believe it.
Yeah. And what's really stupid about this move to ban it, and it's really annoying to me, is that they're moving to ban Google Glass and not just like things that get in your way while like computing that gets in your way.
Oh, it's a very specific one against
Google is listed specifically. There's a couple other pieces of technology, but it's like hyper attentive. I don't know. I think this is so fascinating because I was thinking about this week. And the idea that like, that Google, you know, and the future of Google Glasses and kind of like how driving's going to go. Cause I mean, you know, the reality of it is there's this big survey earlier that, it's actually kind of an old survey, but for some reason it surfaced again, amongst the media. But it's the idea that like adults text way more than teenagers while driving.
Okay.
You know, and we're always terrified of the teenager driver. And
mm-hmm.
But the reality of it is they're way less dangerous than the adults who kind of like get distracted. And you're going to see Virginia, like obviously they're terrified because they're a bunch of Luddites.
Huh.
But it's an interesting question to me. Like, you know, should we not have?
It's hands-free, isn't it? I don't understand.
Yeah, it is. But it's
of
all
course,
up in
the
your
big
face.
Thing for me is like it doesn't really have to do with the being hands-free. It's you're just distracted. You're thinking about a conversation instead of driving. Well, it's like, there should be no talking allowed in the car either, but, you know.
Right. Well, and that's exactly, I mean, that's the, you know, the classic example with the cell phones. And as somebody who lives in California, this is particularly important to me.
Just eyes on the road, man. That's the important part.
It's illegal. Well, see, that's the thing. Your eyes are on the road, sort of. But, you know, so it's like your cell phone. They talk about the idea that it's like it's illegal to drive with your cell phone in your hand in California. Mm-hmm. And because it's, quote unquote, more dangerous, even though every major study ever done has said that it is no more dangerous than talking on a hands-free cell phone. A hands-free cell phone is no safer than talking, and none of that is any more dangerous than talking to the person sitting next to you. What is dangerous is the fact that you're having a conversation. It's not where the phone is in relationship to your body or your face. Texting is clearly more dangerous because it necessitates you looking down. And
it requires you to do some sort of, you know, physical activity. Right? It's the... What is it? Pat your head and rub your tummy?
Right, yeah.
That's essentially what you're doing. It's, you know, different, but that's essentially what you're doing.
Yeah, but what's interesting is that talking on the phone is really no more dangerous than sitting and, you know, talking on the phone is no more dangerous than talking to somebody sitting next to you. And like the classic example of what happens if you set up your Bluetooth and then you, you know, you got your Bluetooth going, and then you grab your hamburger. That's legal. and which drives me nuts, that you've got all these different laws that are clearly don't actually make anybody safer or anybody anything else, but they're, you know, they're doing it anyways. I don't know.
I have a funny feeling that one's going to spread pretty quickly through all the states, too.
What, banning Google Glasses?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wonder, though, because I wonder if you're going to get to the point where it's like, you know, a lot of states are going to – they're going to have it before people are able to use them. And, I mean, it's like, you know, it's easy to say, well, ban Google Glasses. But think – I mean, 5 years. Like, honestly, we'll go 10 years because this is super easy. In 10 years, you won't buy – prescription glasses anymore without embedded viewing technology. Like, I just don't believe that'll happen. I believe in 10 years, every pair of sunglasses, every nice pair of sunglasses, every, you know, prescription quality, you know, reading specs are going to have embedded screens. Like, it just is like,
totally.
So you sit there and you go, like, if every piece of embedded technology or every piece of, like, you know, reading glasses or, you know, eye correction glasses, as you're driving down the street, have screens in them that connect to your iPhone so that you can see text message or, you know, or that show your directions over your eye. Your turn is coming up right here. It just seems nuts to me to think that sort of thing is going to be super prevalent in 10 years. We're going to criminalize that like this early on. And, you know, how do you deal with that?
Google's got to get in front of that, right? And get the lobbying engines like they've been doing with the automated driving to help them see that future and to be like, no, this can actually help and it can aid in driving. Otherwise, that future in 10 years won't exist because, you know, who's going to put in the time and effort when you have to make them detachable and people got to take them off and turn them off and, you know, what I mean?
I don't even think it'll be detachable. I think it'll just be embedded in the glass.
Well, no, I'm saying it won't be because
right, exactly.
You won't be able to use it while driving. It will, if those laws get passed, you could just, the watch will win out as the next big thing, not the glasses, because, you know, there'll be less of an incentive to make cool glasses because there's all these laws saying, nope, sorry, you can't use them while driving.
Right.
And, you know, and so you're not going to embed them. You're going to have it be a separate device because people need to be able to take it off and they still need to be able to see while driving.
Right. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. Agreed.
Well, you know, what's really crazy is that it's like you have heads-up display all over the place on, like, super fancy special cars where they, like, infrared, like, stuff and other information embedded in the glass. Like, that exists already. It just drives me nuts. Like, you know, I think Virginia's wrong here, or not necessarily wrong, because it probably is safer to drive without it. But I don't think that this is going to hold, like, long term. I think people are just going to be – it's moving too fast in that direction. I think before a lot of states get a chance to really criminalize it, it'll be here. You know, and it's sort of like cell phones. You know, if we were to roll back the time, clearly you should have made cell phones illegal to use in cars. I mean, it's just, it's clearly so much safer, you know, even though, yeah, okay, I get it. I'm, you know, it's just as dangerous as the person, if I'm talking to the person next to me. But by the time we got around to the point where we should have criminalized it, it just didn't make any sense to, or it was too late. It was already part of our culture that we drive with cell phones in our hands. So we tried to make it a little bit safer. It didn't make it any safer at all from a statistical perspective, but it definitely gave the state a different revenue stream. Cause they could now, you know, give you a ticket for it. Some better, but the bigger, broader point is that culturally talking while driving on the cell phone is so in part of our culture that you couldn't criminalize it at this point. And I have a feeling that that's what's going to happen with these. I mean, obviously Vermont's trying to get in front of, or West Virginia is trying to get in front of that. But I don't think that they're going to succeed. I don't think that movement's going to win. Especially considering that most adults are the ones who are responsible for texting while driving, which is like actually the most dangerous thing you can do. And with your cell phone, you know, next to browsing Reddit, and actually it's even more dangerous than that because you have to text, you have to type. And yet adults do that and they want to be able to do that. Or, you know, I think they're less likely to support laws that, well, it's just, you know, coming into the eyebrow. You know, I don't know. I think it's fine. I don't know. I think long term that movement's not going to win. But
I would be okay with that because I want the glasses someday, and I want them while driving.
Exactly. So did you hear about T-Mobile and their new?
I read the text message you sent me, but that was it.
Oh man, I was super stoked. So T-Mobile basically came out and they said, we want to stop, and this CEO, he said, we want to stop the BS. And this is a clean podcast, so we will not be using the actual language he used. As it is one of the seven words you're not allowed to say on TV. Thank you, George Carlin. But basically this guy, they had been talking about the idea they wanted to get rid of contracts. And because they think contracts are the bane of our existence, they think that they're basically lying to us. They're stealing money from us, and things become more expensive. So what they want to sell is contractless phones. And obviously, like people, the reason why the iPhone sells is because you can buy it on contract, unless you're like me, you buy a stupid expensive version of the iPhone. And then, really and truly, I mean, it still like helps negate some of the cost, but I could have afforded to buy the low-end model of the iPhone outright for the cost that I bought my subsidized phone. So what they're going to do is they have this interesting strategy where they're going to basically allow you to take out a line of credit on a phone, and they'll embed the monthly payments on the phone into your contract, where not your contract, but your monthly payments. And so you will be taking out a loan. There will be some sort of a long-term thing, and it'll feel like, oh, you're paying it. But once you've paid off the phone, you can pay it off early. You can pay it off month to month. Once you paid it off, that fee goes away. You own the phone wholly. If you want to change services, you can keep your contract with your phone contract with T-Mobile. They'll continue to do that, you know, funding the phone. But if you want to leave early and you want to get out, you just have to pay the full price of the remaining price of the phone. It's just a loan. It's like taking it out on credit.
Interesting. Do you pay interest on it, or?
You know, I don't actually know, to be totally honest.
So what that enables you, it basically, I mean, it sounds like it's a more transparent version of a contract phone is what it sounds like. And theoretically, you'll save money on your monthly fees as well?
Yeah. Yeah, you will. Yes, you will. So what's interesting here is that they've got this kind of cool system going on, because T-Mobile does like the unlimited everything, talk, text, web. Mm-hmm. And basically what they do is they go, we are going to start, they've actually got LTE towers up in 7 cities now. One of them being where I live, which is important to this story because it's why it matters to me. But what's cool is they go, for your basic plan, one line, individual line, it costs $50 a month and that for unlimited talk, text, and web, and 500 megabytes of high-speed internet, so your LTE. Yeah, which you're like, oh, jeez, that's terrible. It's $60 per month for 2 gigabytes of high-speed internet, and it is only $70 per month for unlimited high-speed internet, LTE, where you can use your phone as a mobile hotspot, which I sit there and I go, oh my gosh, I want that. I want that. Instead of internet service, because LTE is usually faster than internet service, I can get LTE through my phone, just plug my phone into my computer, boom, I've got high-speed internet, super high-speed internet to my phone, to my iPad, to my Kindle Paperwhite. I don't need no other junk. I got my tethering plan going on for $70.
That's pretty nice. For $70, huh?
Yeah, because right now it'd be seven for me to have unlimited text, and that's as an individual. For me to have unlimited text, phone, and 5 gigs of internet, period, with tethering on AT&T, it would cost $76 a month, which is, you know, more money with less, and it's not as nice. Mm-hmm. So that kind of upsets me. But if you were to do a family of 5, perhaps, and this is important since we have a family of 5, and we were to all do unlimited, so we all had unlimited high-speed internet. I realize that that's not as exciting for you, as you do not have LTE where you're at, but it would come out to a whopping $42 a month per person for unlimited everything. What? All you have to do is buy your own phone.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Well, and LTE, if you had it, thinking about our situation, is fast enough where you would just, I would just cancel my in-home internet service.
Oh, yeah, without hesitation. It's awesome.
And like you said, you just hotspot the whole thing.
Yeah, exactly. And like, you could hotspot every phone. See, to me, this is the future of internet service. I was thinking about the future all week long. I think about the future all week long, every week. What are you guys talking about? Of course. it's like the job here. But I was definitely thinking about the fact that I was having clarity about the future this week, I should say. It occurred to me that this is what I want. I want one device that connects to the cellular network. I want one phone bill that I pay. I want unlimited high-speed internet. And I want to just Wi-Fi to all my other devices. That's all I want. I want it that simple. I want the one device.
That'd be amazing. You know, when I first graduated and moved into my first apartment, that was what I wanted to do. I actually went like a month or so without internet service, which is crazy. And then I found that I was spending like 2 hours after work hanging out at work just so I could be online, and made a decision. but my I ended up getting an iPhone, as you know. But before that, I was looking at the BlackBerry for that very idea of I was like, I could buy a smartphone, and they had like router docks essentially, where you could put your phone into, you could dock it in the router, it would charge the phone, and then the router would be your hotspot essentially. You know what I mean? Nice. This was only 5 years ago. That's what you can see how much the technology has progressed since. Right. And I was looking through it, and I was like, because my thought process was get a smartphone, get the data plan, and then don't get at home internet service.
Right.
And the way I'm trying to remember what my stopping point was. I think it had to do with the fact that it was at the time significantly slower.
Yeah, edge.
And I don't think it was unlimited was part of my problem, or the unlimited amount was a number.
Right. Well, it's like, and that's yeah. what I actually had long. I've wanted to go with an LTE hotspot as I'm looking at moving and trying to, you know, find a new so I can get out of this amazing studio that I broadcast from. I've thought a lot about the idea of going with a hotspot instead of like a landline internet, because you can take it with you and you can, you know, you can do all sorts of stuff and it's got a lot of perks. But the problem is that nobody offers, even T-Mobile, nobody offers an unlimited LTE data on it. I mean, you can get big caps, you can get like 10, 15 gigs of data, but sometimes I download video games. Sometimes I download.
Isn't unlimited?
For their hotspots.
Well, see, the other problem you're going to run into is, like, let's say you're downloading a movie, you can't go anywhere.
Right.
You know, if you're downloading a game or whatever, you have to be there, because the second you walk away, it stops.
Yeah, but at 15 megabytes per second, 24 at night, which is what the kind of speeds you get, you don't have to sit around very long.
Yeah, I guess when you start talking about the cost savings, you just put up with it, I guess.
Right, exactly. So I don't know. It's an interesting dilemma. I mean, it's something to think about, but I don't know if it's that big of a concern for me. To me, it's just about the amount of data. Which is why the service providers want you to do it. I actually am kind of worried about that. I think I might go over this month, which is a good thing that today is the end of the month. But it's like 3 gigs.
No, our cycle is on the 24th.
Oh, is it?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Well, no wonder I didn't go over.
I think I got an email that you were
getting. Yeah, I was chugging. I was like on my way.
I got an email that says like you were close, and I looked at the date and went, eh, and I just deleted it. Normally I'd forward it on if it was.
Yeah, they text me. I appreciate it. Thanks, AT&T.
So that's interesting. Oh, that's fascinating. Like I said, I looked into it and I really like that idea. And I've even looked into the contract free, the pay as you go options, which for Android is awesome because they make it super easy to do. Surprise, surprise, Apple makes it significantly hard to do. They sell unlocked phones, but in order to use some of these, what are they? There's a special name for these carriers, because they're kind of like their shell companies, really.
Yeah.
And they're just like brokers. But you need to change some number on the phone. And in the latest iOS update, Apple made it so that you can't change that number.
So you have to jailbreak it, of course.
Pretty much. Which I'm like, you could do, I guess. But come on, Apple.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they've become insanely profitable by playing nice with the carriers that subsidize them, because that plays to their advantage. You know,
I wonder if so. My contract is going to be up this summer or October, I guess. I wonder if I could just jump over to T-Mobile and be like, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, because. You know, technically my contract will be over and I'll revert to month to month.
That'll probably make things more expensive for me, right?
Yeah, because my HP discount.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not planning on buying a phone this cycle. Because the current one I have is awesome. It works great.
Yeah. Your short little squatty, fat, heavy phone.
Yeah, that one. I'm very happy with it, and we've got other stuff going on this year.
Honestly, you know, who knows where I'll be to a year and a half from now. I might be jonesing for a new piece of technology, but it's hard for me to believe that this thing will feel that old in 2 years. I mean, it's Apple. It's an amazing piece of hardware. But that's what they do. That's kind of their thing.
I thought I'd be jealous of the 5, and I'm not. Don't get me wrong, right? If you gave me two options, of course I would choose that one.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, oh man, I really wish I could get rid of this phone.
I'm shocked when people upgrade from the 4S to the 5. Like honestly, like I mean, and I really like the 5, but I just sit there and I go, it's you really? You're spending that much money on a, you know, if you were already on the upgrade cycle and whatever, and you wanted a new phone, then okay. And or if you want like a 3S, which some of our aunts were, and they got to upgrade into a 5, that makes more sense. But even a 4 is still a good enough phone. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting, you know.
Yeah, I am very interested in this space. I did a lot of research when our sister was looking for a phone, because I was actually going to suggest that she not stay with us and, you know, and try this other pay-as-you-go plan. And that was when I found out about the whole, like, changing whatever that number was, that Apple messed with it and you couldn't do it anymore. And cause I was super interested in it myself. The other problem that I found is that, I'm just a heavy user in general. Because I use my phone for work-related activities.
Yeah.
I use a ridiculous number of minutes. And, you know, and so I literally, like, the pay-as-you-go plans work really, really well if you're not a heavy user. And you actually genuinely save money because you're not paying for what you don't use. Whereas I'm pretty sure AT&T loses money on me.
Yeah.
Because I do that whole A-list thing, and I literally you know, I'm trying to, you know, right now on a normal day, I'm doing a couple hours per day worth of talk time, you know,
right.
120 minutes here, 120 minutes there. You know, and it doesn't count against anything, which is cool. But, you know, and the data, I don't know. I am a heavy user. And so I often find that these big plans actually work better for me. But that T-Mobile one's interesting because they are skewed towards the big plans. But
yeah, we'll see.
I would love to get rid of my home internet. That would be awesome. Obviously, I don't have an LTE device, so I'd have to wait, I think, for that to happen, because otherwise we would be able to do these.
I see. Well, also, you'd have to wait for an LTE antenna in your area.
Yeah, that's true. Well, there is one in Corvallis.
But they need a repeater to get down to you. Do they not? Do they have one?
I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah. I'll bet you don't have LTE coverage.
Probably not.
You're not as cool as me.
Probably not.
I've got LTE coverage. You know what's crazy? They only have like two antennas. AT&T has like two or three antennas that cover the entire Bay Area. They got a bunch of repeaters. And when they first launched the network, they only had one LTE antenna in San Francisco that covered the entire Bay Area with a bunch of repeaters. It's crazy.
That's amazing. That works really well. Super effective.
Well, I mean, that's the beauty of cell phones, though, right? It's that you sling, you know, you have packages that go from one tower to one tower. You don't actually need all the bandwidth in every tower. There are particular nodes that actually carry most of the bandwidth, and they push it back underground into a fiber optic network. But that carry the whole thing. But it's amazing to me how few you actually need in order to cover a whole area with really fast speeds. But and the weird part was I get better coverage in San Jose than I do in San Francisco.
That is weird.
That's the best part. And for those of you who wonder why, it's because the repeaters use a different parts of the spectrum than what you're actually talking to your phones for. So they get priority bandwidth from tower to tower. So there are fewer people around my repeater than there are in San Francisco. So I get better coverage. Yes. So next week we will be talking about Facebook's new phone. Presumably, did you hear about this?
I did.
Okay. This is kind of exciting.
Making a, let me see. It's going to be an Android based, phone that essentially has either a Facebook skin or it has deep Facebook integration, whatever that means. And the real question is, what kind of app store are they going to use? Is it going to be their own? Are they going to use Android's app store? Which, you know, has huge implications in terms of Google's happiness. let's see, am I missing anything? HTC is making it for them.
Boom.
And that's all we know. Or do we know more?
So that's all we know so far. Well, and we'll find out on the 4th.
On the 4th!
So Thursday. Not Wednesday, right? Yeah, Thursday. So, yeah, the event is called Welcome to Our New Home on Android. So one of the thoughts is that people like they think they're going to launch some sort of like a home screen app.
Which so much is for dumb. Not making a phone, huh?
I know. Well,
liars. I don't trust them ever.
So, I know, you shouldn't. Yeah, it's classic Apple. Why would we build it, you know, classic Steve Jobs? We would never get into the book business. People don't read books anymore. A year later, we're coming out with iBooks.
Because people love their books, and they read all the time. Or they don't read all the time, and now they will.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to bring the book back to people.
Facebook. Social is important. Mobile is important. But everyone does it wrong. I mean, who cares about the fact that we're the one building the apps? Everyone's doing it wrong.
Yeah. We're the best in this space. So this will be kind of interesting. I don't know what to expect from this. I really don't. Because there's a possibility that they're going to...
This sounds like the equivalent of like a social browser that someone puts together where you're just like, yep, it sounds interesting. Nope. Not going to be taken up by anybody.
Well, what it could be, so there's like two things here, right, that it could be. One, because the rumor, it's all rumor mill stuff that it's HTC doing this. I guess there's, I mean, I don't actually have any idea how good these, how valid these rumors are. Yeah. That HTC is building a phone. There's a lot of people that says they're too young of a company, which is, they're almost a decade
what?
Old. I know, like, what? That doesn't even make sense.
What?
Yeah, yeah. I couldn't believe that. I couldn't even believe I read that. I know. It's crazy. But
okay.
But I don't think there's any reason for them to not build a phone. But it's possible that what they're going to build is they're going to build a new, you know, Android build that really will be a deep integration with Android. And it's you'll download this app.
Facebook.
And Yes. Facebook will build an app for Android. And so where it'll be, it won't just be a Facebook app on Android. It will be, we're taking over Android, over your Android. We're putting Facebook in everything and we're building a better system. So you download it and boom, you get it. Or they build their own build of Android, or just did their own build of the operating system. They try to get people to adopt it. Like there's a couple of different ways that they can go about this. And I actually think that's the most likely is that they're going to come out with a tier of different stuff where they basically are going to build, they're going to build a, you know, a modified Android. You can download an app that will kind of, you know, to your phone that will make it look more like this. You can download our fully integrated OS operating system, Android version of Android that's going to be, you know, super cool. Or you can just buy our phone that's tightly integrated with the hardware designed to do the specific things we want it to. And I think they're going to come up with a couple of tiers of different stuff. But kind of excited to see what they do. I mean, I like Facebook well enough. I still think that, you know, it's an interesting question of, like you said, you know, what apps are you going to use? Can I, you know, how's Gmail going to sort into all this? The reason why one of the, you know, big selling points for Android for me is the fact that, like, you log in once and all my contacts, all my email, all my calendars, obviously I'm a Google user in these, all my documents, all my maps, everything is just, boom, it's all there. It all works together. No problem. And like Facebook, I log in and it's like, oh, that's cool. And, you know, it's a similar thing, but it's like, you know, I don't know. The big question will be who they're marketing this towards. Who do they want to buy it? One of the interesting questions that have come up about this is that it's like, you know, there's been a lot of talk about this open versus closed architectures, which one's better.
Right.
And usually we like, you know, Google's not really very open at all. I mean, they claim that they're open, but, in large degree with the big companies, they're not. They're much more open than Apple, but you don't, you know, especially when you get into like different ways that other companies like Samsung and HTC lock down the phones once they get Android. But this one article I read, which I thought was pretty fascinating, and they basically argued that, like, there's been no killer app that really, you know, gave you a reason to go with the open architecture. There, at this point, Google and Apple have been kind of, or Google or Apple and Samsung have been competing features, but you've never had something where, like, Facebook just kind of steps out and has a full has a full year on Android of saying this is a way better way to do Facebook, where people will actually sit there and go, I want that app. I can't get it on on Apple because Apple hasn't integrated it yet into their operating system, that deep integration stuff. And mm-hmm. which there's, man, I just can't, and this article is basically saying, you know, maybe this is it. And I don't know. I don't think it's it, but it's an, I think it, you know, it kind of pushes that way further. You know, there are times, I'll be honest, when I look at my iPhone, I think, man, it'd be really cool if I could change this up. And you can't, it's kind of annoying. You know, the perks still outweigh the drawbacks. Cause I, you know, it's still, they still do stuff better than everybody else, but man, it'd be nice to be able to, you know, change up how my home screen works or change up how my notification center works. But it changes the nature of the system. So I don't know. And obviously like anything that Facebook does would only, they'd only have a year long head start. If it was cool enough, Apple would just, you know, make a deal with them and they would, you know, tie it all together, you know, with the next operating system. But I don't know.
And it's we'll entirely, find out on the 4th.
Right. And it's entirely possible that whatever Facebook's doing and whatever they're going to launch on the 4th, they've already been talking to Apple and Apple's already integrated it all. So come, you know, and they've timed it so that they basically said, we're going to launch in the beginning of April. We'll have April, May, and June to kind of get our, you know, we'll have an entire quarter to kind of get our feet underneath them. And then in July, you announce all the same functionality for the iPhone. Deal? And Apple said deal. Like, it's entirely possible that that's going on behind the scenes. And, you know, all this head start that they get is just to give them kind of a quarter to, you know, settle it. Because as far as Facebook's concerned, you know, they still make all of their money off of knowing everything about you and selling advertising. That's their biggest, you know, stream of income. It's the reason why your Google search bar, they have to pay Apple $1 billion a year to have Google search be the default search engine on your iPhone. Because that's where they make all their money. it's worth it. mm-hmm. I look forward to it. Well, obviously we'll have a better clarity on all this come next week. But you ever use the app Sumly?
No, but I heard they got bought recently.
Yeah. Do you know what it is?
They add things together?
No, actually.
Huh. Okay.
It doesn't sum things. It sums things up.
Okay.
So basically it's an app that's designed to lay out content on your phone in such a way that you like don't have to scroll and stuff. It's just the layout different. It sums it's Sumly. It sums it up nicely. And yeah. Kind of crazy.
Okay. Yeah, I have heard of them. I tried it and it was dumb. And so I deleted the app.
Why, what was it, what was dumb about it?
Just their summaries were not good. Or they weren't interesting to me, I guess.
So you're trying to say you wouldn't pay $30 million for it?
Well, that depends, I guess. I wouldn't. Well, it was free, and I didn't keep it around.
Interesting, because Marissa Myers of Yahoo disagrees. She does think it's worth $30 million.
Well, she's smarter than I am, I guess.
So, I mean,
she's got a lot on her plate. She could make a bad choice.
It could be. But
Yahoo bought Sumly so they could figure out how to have a better homepage.
I guess we'll they like the product. Like they think it's going well, and they, you know, they're trying to figure out how to shake up their product and make money doing what they're doing. You know, and they've, you know, Yahoo News has been a huge part of their limited success in the last couple of years. So to do that better, I'm sure, is something that they are very interested in. But the reason why this is like worth bringing to your attention, because, you know, $30 million go through all the time and we don't mention it, but it's because the inventor of Sumly is 17-year-old Nick Dial.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, he's 17-year-old.
The kid's 17 still in high school.
17 years old. Sold for $30 million. Yeah. Ridiculous.
If he's smart, he can do whatever he can. How do I want to say this? If he's smart, Yeah, he can do whatever he wants for the rest of his life in terms of a career and never have to work for money again. He could just have fun.
Yep.
I like
it. He's got to be smart, but...
Well, you know, he's got to, what he's got to do is he's got to put it, he's got to diversify it, put it into investments, and then just live off the interest. You know, which will be like $600,000 to $700,000 a year.
Yeah, that's it. You know.
Means you could live okay, maybe take a vacation a couple times a week.
Yeah, a week, really. Yeah. I hope he wastes all of his money and becomes miserable because I hate people being happy. That's not true. I don't hate people being happy. I hope he's successful. It's just ridiculous.
I think he will be.
Yeah.
Well, because the nice part about being 17, well, the problem he'll have to look out for is not being taken advantage of, which I know is not Yahoo's point, but there could be a lawyer or an accountant who wants to, quote, help him, and they do for a significant fee, and it just slowly bleeds them out. But hopefully, my guess is that this kid has some very good parental support, and they will help him manage his funds and set him up properly. That's cool. 17 years old, man.
Honestly, though, like, I mean, it's a little bit of social commentary, but I think $30 million at 17 would have made me miserable. I think it would have ruined my life.
I would like to find out.
Yeah, you know, I'm willing to take the risk. At this point, I think I'd be better equipped to handle it. But it would just kill any motivation to do anything. Like, because like you said, you know, you just diversify it, and all of a sudden you're living off of, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars in salary every year. And, like, why, you know, what am I – I would just goof off. Like, I'd say, oh, I'm going to write, and then I would never write. Or I would say, oh, I'm going to build robots, and then I would never build robots. Because why would you? You can just hang out and, like, you know, have parties and go on vacations. And I don't know what I would do with my life. Like, I, you know.
You'd become an aristocrat. You'd have in-depth discussions over fancy dinners.
I'd really want
to. But for only $600,000 a year, I mean, you're not quite in the elite yet. You're just, like, obscenely middle class, if that makes sense.
Obscenely middle class. Yeah, you know what? I love how, like, you and I, I've realized that, like, our perception of wealth is, like, is completely off. I don't know if it's, like, completely right or completely wrong. I tend to think that we're right and everybody else has, like, way overestimates or underestimates or just improperly estimates how much money it takes to be wealthy. I think that's what it is. I feel like we sit there and go, yeah, 600K. Yeah, you could, that'd be nice. That'd be nice. I could live off of that. I could make that work. I think I could make that work. And every, like, I meet people that are like, dude, I can make 20K a year work. No, I don't think you understand.
Okay. All right. Well,
it's when you don't have to work that becomes a problem because now all it is like you're just spending the money. Like you're just spending money. You have to find something to fill your time with. The reason why you can live off 50K a year is because you spend all of your time working for that 50K a year and then sleeping so that you can work for that 50K a year. And you only spend like 2 hours a day most days. And then 6 hours a day on the weekend spending that money. The vast majority of your time is spent figuring out how to earn the money. You spend so little time spending it that it seems like a lot of money. But when you don't have to spend any time earning the money, all you have is time to think about how to spend the money. You spend a lot more money.
Well, okay, so that's not necessarily 100% true.
It's not.
And if you want further proof, visit the website MrMoneyMustache.com. He's a guy who... He retired in his 30s, and he spends – I think he's under $30,000 a year.
Well, yeah, but he's like – okay, no. I don't mean this – I don't – okay. There are outliers.
Well, just in the sense that you can live a fulfilling, meaningful life without spending gobs and gobs of money.
Definitely.
you know.
Definitely. I'm not saying that you have to. I'm saying I actually think you're better off if you don't. I think you live a happier, more fulfilling life if you figure out how to not spend gobs and gobs of money. What I'm saying is I think most people, if you're given gobs and gobs of money and a regular income, you do, because you stop. What I'm saying is I think most people, the reason why we don't spend gobs of money is because we don't have time think about how to spend gobs of money. But when you have gobs of money and you have time to think about how to spend it, people will tend to, because they didn't think about it in the first place.
I don't know. My guess is that it would slowly creep up on you. Like, you know, if you had that kind of income, you buy the big house, right? What the heck, I'll do a little bit bigger. And you decide, yeah, and I don't really want to clean it. I'm going to hire someone to do that. And I don't want to do my dishes or make dinner. I'm going to hire someone to do that. And you slowly... you outsource all of those little things and really make your life convenient so that you can focus on doing those fun things. And so that those things add up super fast. And then the fun things that you choose to do,
you go bigger,
you know, you go, yeah, why not? And then, you know, the next year, because of hedonic adaptation, which, you know, basically means you get used to it. You go bigger. And right. So the first couple of years, it might be okay, and you probably do have to, unless you do are just frugal but in nature, you probably do have to fight it to some degree. But
yeah, see, that's what
know.
I'm saying.
See, I'd be happy if I had, I don't know, I'm going to, if all of my student loans were paid off, I guess, if I had about $1 million saved, I could live off that interest, and it would be okay.
You see, my thought is, if you gave me $50,000 a year every year for the rest of my life, and I realize that that number becomes less significant as time goes on because of inflation, which is important, that would be really good, because basically what you'd do is you'd cover my, like, you know, my yearly nut and then some, but it wouldn't give me enough money to buy a nice house, buy a nice car, it's like it covers the basic car, it covers rent, it covers savings, but it doesn't allow me to live a cool life. So now it's like all of my, I'm safe. I don't have to stress about money because of my base is covered. Now I can get into doing things like, well, I have to write because I have to make more money if I want to grow further, especially because as time goes on, like, that becomes a less significant number. I can't live off of 50K for the rest of my life because, you know, if I don't, unless I move out of the area or whatever, or downgrade my life as time goes on, which who wants to do that? you got to keep chasing that, you know, that next loop.
Well,
on that
you just
race.
Do the math at a 4% withdrawal rate, and therefore you keep up with inflation and you're fine. But anyways,
but my point is, you know, my point in all of this is that if you could give me like a base of like, that's, I'm you know, winning the lottery, I don't want so much that I feel like I don't have to work, but I don't want so little that, you know, or, you know, I'd say 50,
well, if you're out of that situation, let me know. I'll take the difference, and it'll be an experiment. You know, you keep enough, so you get your 50K a year. I'll take the rest. I'll just tell you how it works out.
All right, man. It's, you know what? I'll make a deal with you. If I get that much guaranteed income, I will definitely think about it. I will spend solid 5 minutes penciling it out.
just fly me over in person so I can help you pencil that out.
Oh, fair enough. Okay, deal.
So,
we totally got off track on anything tech-related.
And we are actually getting pretty close to the wall.
Cool.
Do you have a quick one, or it's okay if you don't?
I have a couple of quick ones, but they're just not that interesting.
All right. So, on that note, that was an interesting little topic.
Yeah.
In the end. That's okay. Who needs to always have tech, right?
Well, I mean, that's, you know, we talk about advertising and, you know, sometimes get into our own personal views of the world. Hey, man,
yeah.
It's a diverse show.
I think that, you know, and it's relevant to, you know, a founder who starts it up and they, you know, make it big time. They have to, you do have to grapple with those types of life questions. And, you know, and I do know of some, to, you know, to pull it back to summarize it. I do know.
Get it.
I do know of one founder who said that he worked really, really hard, built up his company, sold it, and did the whole like retirement thing on a beach and hated it. Oh, great. And so now he's back in the valley building another startup, but he's not doing it for money because he's already got that. Now he's just following a passion and an interest and is busier than ever and loves it.
Yeah.
That's the trick, right, is to find what you love, and you literally don't have to do it for money now, and chances are you will be busy and stressed and love almost every minute of it, and that's okay. Yep. That's a good place to be. And quite honestly, if I read a really, really interesting thing, because it was talking about this idea of working for money or not, and basically it said, you know, if you have a passion for something, figure out as fast as you can how to do that. Even if, you know, the biggest excuse, like, well, I was like, well, no one would ever pay me to do this, right?
Yeah.
And what he says, or what he said was, and this was like a massive, you know, very prominent career advisor person, that when I read the name, I went, oh, I've heard that before, you know, but I don't remember right now. Yeah. But he was saying, chances are, you know, he goes, go for it anyways. You know, figure out how to make life work. Don't worry about the money. Spend the time becoming an expert in that field. Because believe it or not, you will get really, really good at it and get to the point where people will be willing to pay you gobs of money for that skill because they need something done and they haven't taken the time to learn it because they were too busy having a job.
Right.
And like he gave like a fisherman example, you know, where it was like, yeah, being a fisherman probably doesn't pay the bills. But man, if you do it a lot and you really get into it and you invest into it, there are guys out there who will pay you to tell them where the fish are, how to fish for them, what the technique is. And, you know, you just get to that point. And it's like, and now all of a sudden you are making, a living doing what you love the entire time. It's like, huh, there's some interesting truth to that. Obviously, you got to put food on the table and shelter over your head.
Nice part about being a fisherman is you can just go fishing to put food on the table.
True. As a fisherman, yeah. And it just, you know, and that obviously, you know, extends to whatever you think your hobby is. But I thought it was interesting.
That is very interesting.
Yeah, where you got to keep the long game in mind. But like I said, you still got to put food on the table, which is still part of the trick. All right. Very cool, man. Thanks for driving the conversation. I appreciate it. Next week, I promise I'll contribute more to the
podcast.
To the happenings, but that's all right.
Hey, man. That's okay. You're going to have to do this all on your own in 2 weekends, so.
Yeah, I'm on it. You probably, when is that again?
It's April 19th. I could try to podcast in.
Nope, that
would be pretty funny.
I got it.
I won't worry about it, dude.
Cool beans. So on that note, everybody, my name is James Furlow. My brother is Matthew Furlow, and we will talk next time. I would say that if there was a scale of preparedness, 1 being I'm not prepared at all, 10 being I could do this show with my eyes closed, memorized, I'm probably sitting in between a 0 and a 1.
0 and a 1, nice. You know, what I really like about that is if you think back to our first show, I feel like we were somewhere in the 9.5 region. You know, it was nice to have a little... source material, but we didn't really need it. We've come a long ways.
I got little horns in my hair.
Yes,
too.
You do. The irony of it is
yeah, not which awesome, I'll man. We'll talk about it once we're actually rocking and rolling.